Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Curzon podcast. I am Hannah Seymour and I am here with Jenna Hobbs. Hello, Jenna.
Hello, Helen.
And Freddie Chodel.
Hello, Helen.
Is that how you say on the surname?
Yeah,
Chodel. Yeah. You work at the Curzon too?
Yes, I do. Front of house stuff. Mm-hmm. And have just seen Jon Favreau's Jungle Book, which is what we're here to talk about today.
Absolutely. It's good to have you here.
Very nice to be here.
Good to see you too, Jenna.
Oh, thanks, Helen. It's always nice to be back in room.
So we just, me and Jenna saw The Jungle Book yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We loved it.
We did.
I saw it today in 3D.
Yeah, because we only saw it in 2D, so we didn't get the full experience.
And I also loved it.
It's hard not to love it, isn't it? Don't you think? I just think it's magical. And I think any of us have all watched the original as children. So there's a special connection there. And rewatching it just makes you feel like a child again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's beautiful, you were saying in 3D, I'm sure.
Yeah, 3D is fantastic. I mean, it opens with a sort of Disney logo,
mm-hmm.
and it's a really well-conceived, I think, amalgamation of Kipling's classic and the sort of Disney animation. And it kind of gives way to the famous sort of minarets and towers of the Disney logo,
mm-hmm.
and then it's suddenly you're plunged into this Indian jungle, which is ultra sort of photorealistic. And it with 3D as well, it just adds a lot more sort of depth and texture. And I really enjoyed it. I've never been a sort of prominent sort of fan of 3D, but I actually thought this film was one of those films that, you know, really works perfectly.
Yeah, I always actively avoid 3D, and I hate to be one of those people who's like, no, not 3D. But it kind of gives me a bit of a headache. And there's only been a few films where I've felt it wasn't just for the gimmick. Obviously, Avatar, it was the gimmick, but it was also an amazing 3D experience. But other films, I just find at the beginning of the film you get like a shot out, and the rest of it you're just sort of like, what's the point of me wearing these glasses?
Yeah.
But you were sort of saying Jungle Book's
different. Yeah, because I agree with you. I think a lot of the 3D opens itself up for sort of accusations of just, yeah, sort of, as you say, gimmick or gimmickry. And this film to me really came alive with sequences. The sequences really that I was struck by were probably fire. Any use of fire in this film, sort of the red flower, is particularly particularly strong. I think a sequence where Mowgli meets Kaa, voiced by Scarlett Johansson, is particularly impressive because you have this sort of giant snake that actually looms out of the screen towards you, and you feel as if you're being hypnotized. You're the subject of Kaa's sort of murderous intentions, as it turns out, or near murderous intentions. So yeah, I thought it worked fantastically well.
I might go and see it again in 3D.
I think I will as well. Yeah. I feel like I've missed out a little bit on the full experience. Because I can just imagine that jungle kind of feeling like it's surrounding you as well.
And I want to be in a jungle.
Yeah.
I think as well, like it has we're talking about the sort of changes in light and tone.
Uh-huh.
And I think in 3D as well, you go from these sort of stark contrasts. And I think the film is often built around these kind of stark contrast in the way the jungle is lit, particularly. So you go from sort of arid beginning,
mm-hmm.
where you have this drought, and most of the action, the plot kicks off from this sort of desolate start, and then you go through stages in the jungle, and you go through sort of kind of nightmarish mud-sloped ravines, and sort of deep, dark, kind of tenebrous jungle, and then you get to these wonderfully lush, verdant meadows that the brilliantly voiced Baloo by Bill Murray occupies, and you have this kind of, I think that's the only, you have these little concessions towards Disney at this point. It is a Disney property now, and when you get Baloo, I think that's the closest you feel to that sort of Disney classic.
Yeah, the original.
Yeah, I think Baloo is a constant reminder, because you have the sort of wisecracking Bill Murray, who actually speaks verbatim some of the lines of kind of Phil Harris, who originally voiced Baloo and made it quite an iconic screen character.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. I think that sort of, it doesn't pay, it's not slavishly attentive.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing that we should talk about, is that it doesn't feel like they've said we have to follow the original Jungle Book to the letter the whole way through at all. In fact, I think it's quite different in lots of respects.
Yeah, I think Mowgli as well. A lot of Mowgli's sort of idiom is quite sort of 21st century.
Definitely.
You know, there's a lot of the usage of the word cool and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you have kind of Kipling sitting alongside sort of like 21st century slang, and I actually thought it, you know, it's quite pleasing. So
yeah, there were moments where it was a bit too like goofy. I was like, this is slightly like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids in some of the like language. But then I was like, hang on, Helen, this is a children's film. Like, calm down. And I really like, yeah, I think it did work as a whole in that way that the language sat next to each other. It kind of differs. There's a nice kind of backstory that you get a little bit more than you do in the original, and there's a diversion from the original, and you see a little bit more of the wolves, and there's some things that happen with them that kind of add to the emotional tension and kind of reasons for why characters do things.
And I think, yeah, all of the things that have been expanded upon or slightly changed, I think what they aim to do and what they have done for me is really connect the emotional side of the story more, and Mowgli's journey and all the relationships he has with the animals. In the original, they happen so quickly that you don't form such huge attachments as you do in the original, and in this production of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in this version of it, I think a lot of the action feels a much, much more fluid and the sort of transition from scene to scene seems more natural, whereas if you go back to I rewatched the Disney version a couple of weeks ago, and it is pretty episodic, and some of the links between scenes are a little bit more jarring and not as smooth. And I really like the way that you'd have a sort of a visual flourish in this version particularly that felt more sort of effortless, and it didn't feel as clunky. I mean, rewatching the Disney film, I felt was a little bit, it wasn't as strong to me. My memory, my sort of nostalgia tinted memory, really coloured it quite strongly.
Yeah,
it's still a really good film. But this version, I thought, handled those changes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. I rewatched part of it this morning, and it felt like it was like this little scene, this little skit, followed by this one, kind of pieced together, rather than this whole narrative arc that we've got in the updated version.
I mean, I'm sure we all said that when we were children. Like,
yeah.
I liked it, Mom, but it was a bit jarring.
These vignettes are troubling. Yeah. Well, I think as well, in the original, I think a lot of it is built around the sort of musical number.
Yeah.
I think maybe we should talk about the use of music in this film.
Absolutely.
And actually, the fact that you do get two references back to that film, Baloo singing Bare Necessities, and King Louie, voiced by Chris Walken, singing I Want to Be Like You.
Yeah,
and I think, for me, only one of those reprises worked. I think the Bare Necessities, I was waiting the whole way to hear that. I love that song, and it's one of those songs that just gets in your head, and you just love, and you always sing it, and yeah, I was waiting for it, and I feel like it worked really well as a little bonding mechanism for the two of them singing it together. The King Louis song, Want to Be Like You, felt really shoehorned to me, and I didn't think I needed it. I don't know. How about you, Helen? What do you think about that?
Yeah, like, they didn't go full... So, like, this isn't a musical, we should say that. Like, and they kind of... It is really, like, a reference to the original rather than... Because, like, obviously in the original they're dancing, and there's kind of, like, reprises and all of that, and this film doesn't do that. I quite like the King Louis bit. Like, I think if you are sitting there, like, for us, you were sitting there, like, waiting for the big numbers, because they're not big numbers, it can maybe feel a bit disappointing. But actually, I think it worked a lot better. And, like, King Louis, it's a bit, like, it's a very creepy performance.
Mm. Yeah.
And, like, that kind of unsteady singing kind of, I don't know, I think it worked.
You enjoyed it?
Yeah.
I think, it's in the long line of sort of idiosyncratic Christopher Walken performances, mm-hmm. this is particularly creepy.
Yeah.
And actually, I think King Louis in this is far less... I think he's a mischievous trickster in the Disney version.
Definitely.
In this film, this iteration anyway, he's more like a sort of mob boss.
Yeah.
And is particularly threatening and is really creepy, emerges from the shadow. We were talking about the sort of various allusions to Apocalypse Now,
mm-hmm.
but I felt as... At the same point, maybe it's just because he's an ancient ape. I think it was a gigantic
something.
And they mention it a number of times.
They changed what he was because he was an orangutan. But apparently, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this. But the gigantic that's actually a species that was native to India. So they tried to make all of the animals native to India.
I thought that was a made up word.
No.
And they're very aware, I think, that people are going, that is an oversized orangutan. What on earth are you doing, Jon Favreau? But they have reworked the lines from I Wouldn't Be Like You to include it twice.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, they didn't need to be that scared of that. I think they should just present that this is King Louis. Look how majestic he is. Look how threatening he is. And I think they achieved that really well.
He's massive.
He is huge. Because I think, initially, if you watch the trailers and some of the sort of the promotional stills, it looked a little bit absurd, but it works, actually. Particularly sort of his, you know, I think Blue says that mound of flesh sitting on an ancient throne is quite impressive. And it is visually impressive.
I mean, all of the animals are so visually impressive, though, aren't they? I think you can't not talk about Shere Khan. Just incredible, the work, the animation there. That blew me away. It looked like a real tiger. And Idris Elba's voice, coupled with it just seemed so natural. Mm. Maybe Idris Elba was born to be a tiger. Yeah. I'm kind of convinced.
I think Idris Elba definitely imbued Shere Khan with that sort of majesty.
Mm. Yeah.
That it needed, because I think a lot of the vocal performances, like Walken's isn't that comedic, but obviously Bill Murray's is.
Yes.
Then you have these weird small sort of desert rats that kind of pipe in and kind of reminiscent of those little field mice in Babe.
Oh yeah.
They kind of trill and, mm-hmm. and repeat the word. I thought that, you know, little bits like that were verging on a bit twee,
mm-hmm.
but actually Idris Elba's particularly majestic, but so is Ben Kingsley actually.
Yes.
As Bagheera. I thought Bagheera was suitably kind of serious.
Yep.
And he was, you know, reminiscent of the baggy from the, you know, 1960s Disney version. Mm-hmm.
Definitely, yeah. I just want to talk about Bonemo. I love the bear.
Every time Baloo came on screen, I could not help but smile and just feel like a little kid again watching him.
He looked like a real bear.
He did.
I mean, the actual animation is amazing for all the animals, like, just in terms of realism. Yeah, he's like the original Baloo has such a strong place in my heart. Just because I remember just finding it so funny and being like, he's such a cool guy.
Charm personified in bear form.
Probably like my first crush. Baloo the bear. So then there was a part of me that like, this isn't Baloo, just because of the voice of Phil Harris. It's Phil Harris?
Phil Harris.
Yeah, so iconic. But like, to imagine myself watching this again when I was like 6 or 7, mm-hmm. I would have had that same thing because he's so charming and funny.
So funny. I think most of the laughs come from that section, all the sections with him.
Yeah.
There's a great bit with the honey.
When
Mowgli's trying to get the honey and... Then he gets like bee stings on him.
Yeah, I think it's probably the bee stings, like that sort of reality of living in the jungle is really great in this. And that sort of, throughout the film, even though I think that there's been some concern about the certification, whether it should be a 12A or a PG.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think the BBFC have got it right with PG.
Me too.
And I do think that there has peril throughout it. But I think it's like comfortably tense and comfortably threatening.
This is something I was thinking about actually, because the original Jungle Book, I'm pretty sure I've watched that from about 2 years old, like very young, could watch it, follow the story, love the animals, but I think this Jungle Book is a step away from that. You couldn't watch that as a very, very young child.
Yeah.
Although I think PG is right, you know, 12 is way too old, but I think it's more of a maybe age 8 kind of film, 7, 8 to get into rather than...
Certainly Shere Khan is, I'd say it's pretty scary for young children.
Yeah, and I think just how realistic as well the disfigurement of Shere Khan is.
Yeah.
things like that.
He's, like, one of his eyes is very disfigured, which is quite scary. But yeah, PG, definitely.
Yeah, PG's right.
Mild peril, I think.
Mild peril.
Sometimes moving into strong peril.
Yeah, verging on some sort of the fights between certain creatures in this are pretty, pretty brutal. They don't shy away and show that sort of nature's red in tooth and claw.
Yeah.
And I think very early on, somebody says something about, you know, living in the jungle. It's not that sort of, it's not that sort of place, or something like that. When Bagheera, I think, initially starts to take Mowgli away from the jungle to the man village.
And also, I liked that he doesn't. He's not like pristine. His skin, Mowgli's. He's got scars and scrapes over him.
Yeah.
Apparently, he's got an R and a K at some point on his body to kind of pay homage to Roger.
See, like, I didn't see the R. Yeah. I saw the little K.
Oh, you saw the K. Yeah, that's really R clever. Somewhere as well.
There's good lines from Kipling about. There's a verse. Obviously, Kipling often ended because the Jungle Book is actually a collection of short stories.
Stories, yeah.
And there's two or three, you know.
Yeah, they were the Jungle Books.
So. Yeah, and there's a sort of verse, a song in all of them, and there's a bit about the jungle law.
Mm-hmm.
The strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack.
Yeah, yeah. And I really liked that bit, actually, brought in at the beginning and then repeated as the film went on, that unified all of the animals together, and yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, the, sort of without going too much into plot, I think the sort of the general narrative, or at least the sort of dramatic tension, seems to come from this the order in the jungle. And so you do have this mantra running through it, which is forgotten in places, usually under the threatening presence of Shere Khan, who spouts his own sort of form of propaganda. But
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It is ultimately the thing that, you know, that brings them together right at the end, and the sort of the moment where they're about to pitch into absolute crisis, they do round upon that sort of Kipling. So I think even with all these sort of concessions to Disney, it's quite nice that ultimately the thing that brings them them together is some sort of original verse from Kipling.
Yeah, that's
so really I like nice. The callback to source material is ultimately what wraps the story up.
Yeah.
And to me, I thought, it's just wonderfully magnanimous towards its source material.
Definitely. Some callbacks to other line, other Disney, other Disney, like The Lion King, is a herd of wildebeest and Fall, that's very much like Scar and Mufasa's Fall, and sort of the rock that the wolves inhabit is similar to Pride.
Yes.
Pride Rock, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a few, and apparently at the end, I didn't quite spot it, but there's a warthog in it, and apparently there's a warthog with a little meerkat as a homage to Timon and Pumbaa in there right at the very end as well.
So yeah, I'm sure there are plenty of like little Disney Easter eggs.
Yeah.
That we must have missed. We'll find it on the second 3D view.
Yeah. I'm serious about seeing it again.
Yeah.
I genuinely really want to.
Definitely. We've had a tweet this week from Kat Corbetti. I hope that's how I say your name, Kat. So she's basically said that The Jungle Book is decent and sassy, which I think we kind of think, and it strikes a great tone for the mid-2010s audience. She says it's fun, but she wonders if it's necessary, and that she's been sensing a pattern of that within the like live-action remakes. I'm wondering what we think about that. Do we think that this adaptation was necessary?
Depends what you mean by necessary. I mean, I don't see film as necessary in that. I don't think
it's
any story
not necessary for film to be necessary.
Yes, I don't I think it's unnecessary for film to be necessary.
Yeah.
Film is effectively is a visual medium that is, you know, is the way of telling a story in a visual mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this time, Jungle Book, a remaking of Jungle Book, doesn't strike me as being for any sort of ulterior motive. Mm-hmm. I think that Jon Favreau has, you know, has a proven track record of taking films, making them on budget, and turning out very sort of visually presentable stories. I think the Jungle Book or Jungle Books, classic examples of literature. And actually, I think this film, whether you feel that it's necessary or unnecessary for it to be produced at this point in time, I think it's a good adaptation that pays homage to a literary source and a filmic source. Mm-hmm. So I'm absolutely fine with Jon Favreau choosing or being given the helming rights of this film.
Yeah. What about you, Helen?
Nailed it, mate. Absolutely nailed it there. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it doesn't need to be necessary. It's really good fun. I'm glad they've done it.
But I think it packs a good message in the sense that, you know, the kind of order of the world and the order of the animals and how you can have a tyrant, but if you can kind of stand up together and acceptance of people's differences and things like that. It's a nice message.
I think it's a nice message. My only slight concern would be that throughout this film, the animals are aware of Mowgli's kind of capabilities, more kind of human capabilities, mm-hmm. and they call them tricks.
Mm.
And then at the end, you could see that this, you know, wild and beautiful landscape is effectively rescued by the sort of wiliness and craftiness of a human being.
Mm.
So, and he is presented as a bit of a sort of saviour figure without giving too much away at the end.
Although, because there was a review in The Guardian that talked about this, and he is, although he's still a child who messes up a lot.
He does.
And is saved by the Baloo and Bagheera. So I think it saves itself from becoming too much like that.
Yeah.
But I know where you're going.
Yeah, I think they come close at points. Yes. I think then... Like any good story, any good narrative, you need to have a sort of unifying figure that the action kind of wraps itself around, and it just happens to be Mowgli, who happens to be a man-child. So you have a lot of people projecting many disparate thoughts and beliefs onto mm-hmm. his very sort of skinny frame and skinny shoulders. And you're right, he does mess up, and it's a recurring theme throughout. And ultimately, he is actually rescued by a number of animals throughout the story. I think Bagheera, notably, Baloo as well. But he does somehow manage to pull the entire jungle together right at the end. And I think there is that line by Bagheera about, you know, he did something I've never seen in all my years in the jungle. He unified us in one moment. So I think it opens itself up to accusations like that, but I do think it manages, as you say, to suitably dodge that just about.
Yeah.
For me, I think it came close.
But, okay, yeah. Yeah, because that line by Bagheera, it's like, never did I see such a small boy. And it was pointed out, I think it was a Peter Bradshaw review, the one that I'm talking about in The Guardian. Normally that film would end with, that was the moment I saw a small boy become a man.
Yeah.
And it's really clever how it says, bring the whole jungle together. And like dodges that thing about him becoming a man and the man being the saviour.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a bit about the end of the film. We were saying before we started recording that obviously this is a remake of a film that was based on a book, so the story is out there. So spoilers aren't really not too an appropriate word, but we are going to talk a bit about the end now and some of the other points. So turn off if you don't want to know what happens.
A little bit spoilery, but not too much.
Yeah. So the end... is different from the 1967 animation. Because in that one, Mowgli goes, sees a lady, and pootles off to her, and in this one he stays in the jungle.
Yeah, and he's sort of... So I was kind of expecting... He's on the back of the elephant in, like, kind of the very last shot.
Yeah, but it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah, they are very beautifully done.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, the elephant's going to take him back to the man village now. He's, you know, it's over. But that's actually not the case.
No, it kind of performs an about turn at that point.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I thought you had definitely been directed towards a conclusion. And then, again, it changes from darkness to light. And he's suddenly back in the jungle. And it's a recall of, I think, the opening scene. It's just completely, it's cyclical and it reflects the opening, 100%. And there's the jungle has been reordered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I've talked to people who've seen it and they think that that might be a deliberate, judging by its sort of commercial success already, that it has opened itself up to a sequel.
I thought too. Yeah. They didn't want to close the doors on a sequel for it.
And they produced something that's well worth watching.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they handle that, because I think this iteration, this version is particularly strong.
So. Yeah, isn't it? Mm. It feels complete because, it doesn't feel like you need another story. It would have to be a completely different story.
Yes, I wonder that it's one of those things that if they make a sequel, they can kind of really shuck themselves off previous screen adaptations and go, we can actually go into sort of, virgin territory.
Yeah.
And do stuff with the characters. Maybe, Carl's appearance in this film is particularly fleeting.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of a shame because it's a quite memorable performance. Memorable
Scarlett scene. Johansson's
Scarlett Johansson's brilliant. And there's that kind of, hint back to Trust in Me, which I think is rather beautifully done.
Yeah, there's very nice animation with the eye as well that I know you pointed out is particularly beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, that's when the sort of plot exposition of a previous story that I won't give too much away, because I think that's that's a powerful segment. Mm. But the eye, particularly in this 3D version, the iris kind of collapses into a man's red fire and this the red flower, which is... beautifully done, beautifully rendered, and like I said earlier, the flame in 3D I think was particularly strong.
Mm.
And what do we think about, Mowgli, not going home because he's seen a girl and choosing to stay in the jungle? What do we think about that? Did we need to see him seeing a girl and growing up like that, or not?
It's interesting, I think. I mean, they've definitely, if we can see that they've left themselves open to a sequel. Mm. I was trying to think back, because he does go towards the sort of very outskirts of the village.
Yeah.
But all of the figures within the village are male, I think. I don't think you can see any sort of women.
I think you're right.
And they're all kind of carousing and drinking and celebrating. So all these sort of aspects must be alien.
Mm.
And it feels alien and it feels mild. It does, they're enjoying themselves, but to Mowgli it must be completely bemusing. And that's where he gets the fire from, which kind of enters the final act,
sort
of precedes what happens next. But I wonder if that's deliberate, that you don't see any female figure at all, really, any female human character.
Mm.
I don't know, what did people think about
that? No, I think that's a good point, that you don't really see that side of it. I think it's kind of like in the same way that like Frozen and Tangled kind of purposely moved away from that, and everything's perfect because you found romance. I think maybe it's doing a similar thing there.
Disney's where taking themselves away from that, tying every character up in a love story at the end,
Which I think is good. And the film is kind of about, even though you're different, you can all live together, and that kind of community feel, which I think is a much stronger message, especially for today. I would worry if they were doing a sequel, because then I imagine that would be Mowgli. Oh no, I've seen that woman. What am I going
to
do? I mean,
there's something to be said about the fact that, as a boy, he currently, can see only the things he needs in that jungle. He doesn't need anything outside of that. He's got friendship, he's got family, he's got companionship. But I suppose what the original Disney is hinting to, that there's going to come a point where what's in the jungle isn't going to be enough for Mowgli. And maybe that's something that will be explored in a sequel as well.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I think talking about fellowship and sort of fraternity and that sort of childhood and sort of naive, or like that wondrous take on the jungle, and he sees it for what it is, which is essentially kind of a playground initially.
Yeah.
And I think that Bagheera says very early on about, the problem with men or man cubs is they take an awful long time to grow up in comparison to the wolves. So I wonder if you're right in that reading that, if there is a sequel, which it seems quite likely, whether that is going to be the sort of kernel of that plot point, that he's aged somewhat and it doesn't quite hold the same sort of wonder and amazement for him, and he has to find another source of inspiration.
I hope it's not like Tarzan. That's the trouble.
I mean, for now we can all stay in the childhood bubble there, which is great, the great thing about this film.
Yeah, go see it.
Yeah.
Also, at the end, he's on a tree with Baloo, and then Baloo does he nearly breaks the tree.
Classic Baloo.
Baloo.
Oh, what's he like?
Yeah, and they will like laugh just as it ends in that row. And Mowgli looks so much like Lena Dunham. In that moment, the way she laughs.
Please tweet Lena Dunham.
Yeah.
The way he laughs, like, because she has such a wonderful, yeah, like, cheeky when she laughs. And I was like, it's Lena Dunham. And I suspect that they just got her in.
You reckon? Just a little face more at the end.
So just go, even just for that, and then leave a comment whether you agree with me.
The other, yeah, cool thing about the end is the book, the Jungle Book.
Is, yeah.
So they open with that in the original.
Oh, yeah.
And they reuse it because the book never closes in, yeah, the original 1967. And they use it as the end credits, and it's really lovely. And then it closes at the end.
Yeah.
So they bring it around full, yeah, circle.
Full circle, and now we can move on and do, yeah, something new.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some great kind of animation bits of the pages turning, yeah, as well. So stay around for the credits.
Yeah, definitely don't miss out on that.
Unless you need to go to the toilet, which I did and kind of missed that. But I saw the first sort of 30 seconds.
Yeah,
sort of
that's great. No, I need to wait. Yeah, lots of water in this film.
Yes, loads of river. Well, there's a lack of river, and then so much river that it might make you need,
yeah,
a wee.
Yeah. A surfeit to river.
Yeah.
Can we give a shout out to the woman in the chair behind us?
Oh yeah, yeah. This is one of my favourite things about cinema, is going in with loads of people and just general public and seeing people's reactions. In our screening, there was the most wonderful woman who had this range of noises I've never heard before, from ooh to ooh. And she was great. She made my cinema experience.
It was so good. There's a little pangolin that's really, really sweet, and it's a really good comedy character. And she was, oh, he's nice. Oh, he is nice.
She was great.
She's brilliant. Yeah, this is a really fun film. It's we've reviewed a lot of films so far on the podcast, and this is one of the funnest and happiest films. Mm-hmm. It's something that's kind of occurred to me. You don't get a lot of happy films. Like, normally, yeah, there's quite a lot of heartache and sadness, yeah, and seriousness. So give yourself a break, guys, and, yeah, just go and see.
And go with everyone. I think everyone can find something to love in this film. The whole family.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go and see it.
Go and see it, definitely.
10 out of 10 from Helen.
10 out of 10?
Yeah.
Ooh. 9.5.
Okay.
8.5.
Oh.
It's gone down in gradations, though. Yeah. But it's still very good.
It's still great. Just me and Freddie are harder to please.
I may have been a bit over the top.
No, Helen, the bear. The bear gets 10 out of 10 for me every time.
So much. Okay, we will see you next week. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thank
and
you
if
listening.
You can give us a rating on the... What's it called?
iTunes.
Yes.
Just one of the biggest.
One of those, yeah, things. You give us a rating on there, or if you can tweet us or anything like that, that would be really great.
Or the SoundCloud.
Or the SoundCloud. Yeah.
Bye, guys.
See you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.